Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, we start with the good martini, and that is that the Trump administration is getting serious about border security. Shouldn't come as a huge surprise, since that was such a major part of the 2016 campaign. The president has tried. You can debate the amount of effort he's put in to try to get funding for the wall. He scrapped the executive version of DACA and hoping to get a legislative version of it in exchange for greater border security in a number of ways, as well as limiting chain migration and visa lotteries and that sort of thing. That's not going to happen anytime soon. So as a result of the caravan that is now paused in Central America, as well as just his general frustration with no progress on immigration, looks like he's moving National Guard troops to the border. Here is Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen announcing this on Tuesday at the White House.
The president has directed the National Guard personnel be deployed to the southern border. The Department of Defense, as you know, has long supported the efforts of DHS to protect our nation's borders. This includes ongoing counter-narcotic missions, infrastructure construction, persistent surveillance operations training, and aerial support throughout the Western Hemisphere. The Department of Defense is a longtime partner of the Department of Homeland Security, and I thank them for their support. While plans are being finalized, it's our expectation that the National Guard will deploy personnel in support of CBP's border security mission. It will take time to have the details in place, but we are beginning today and we are moving quickly.
President Trump himself tweeting about this many times in recent days. The last couple of tweets, one yesterday. Our border laws are very weak, while those of Mexico and Canada are very strong. Congress must change these Obama-era and other laws now, all caps. The Democrats stand in our way. They want people to pour into our country unchecked. Crime, all caps. We will be taking strong action today. And then earlier today on Thursday, he says the caravan is largely broken up thanks to the strong immigration laws of Mexico and their willingness to use them so as not to cause a giant scene at our border. Because of the Trump administration's actions, border crossings are at a still unacceptable 46-year low. Stop drugs! Exclamation point. So, Jim, there's a lot of liberals wondering whether the president can order troops to the border, and it's pretty clear that he can since the border security is already federalized. So I'm not sure what they're talking about with posse comitatus and things like that. The question is whether there is a surge of a threat, a major threat at the border right now, or this is just born out of Trump's frustration. Let's hope it's the former.
Yeah, look, whenever Trump does something, you see people tearing their hair out about it. A good thing to go back is to ask, okay, has this been done before? I believe it was, you know, sometime in his first year, he signed the proclamation for National Loyalty Day. And everyone's like, oh, my God, Trump signing Loyalty Day. This is just like Nazi Germany. It turns out that every president had signed the proclamation for Loyalty Day going back decades. And, of course, we had not slipped into being some sort of terrible dystopian, nightmarish authoritarian regime. Both President Bush and President Obama deployed the National Guard to the border for limited periods of time. One, you know, there's nothing that unprecedented about this. No one should be screaming that this is something, you know, inherently authoritarian or abuse of power or anything like that. Now, probably the more interesting question is, once Trump gives this order, what can they really do? Because maybe some other folks are imagining, you know, military checkpoints, planes and tanks and this heavy military presence, like a fortified, you know, battle line or something like that. That's not really the way it works, because the military does not have arrest power. It's not like the military can go out and do that. However, you can use their resources, their aircraft, their drones, technology, intelligence gathering, you know, all that kind of stuff to see where people are attempting to cross the border. And then you can send U.S. Border Patrol people. Two other ideas I've heard floated around. One is possible road construction. We're talking about some very remote areas, and if you want to send out some border control agents to go out and capture those guys or catch somebody as they cross the border, sometimes you can get there quicker if there's a road. The military could do that, and it would not necessarily be any kind of, you know, violation of posse comitatus or any other laws or something like that. The other thing is, you know, as somebody pointed out, if they don't have arrest power, you could actually use them for paperwork. You can actually use them for quote-unquote back-end administrative tasks, and that will free up more Border Patrol personnel to actually go out and do the border patrols. One of the things that's fascinating is we discussed earlier in the week the number of people attempting to cross the border month by month and since the Trump administration took over, there was this really steep drop shortly after Trump took office, and it had remained for a while. I believe the news out this morning is that it hit 50,000 in the past month, and that's a little that's getting up back higher to where it was before Trump took over. But it's not like you saw – it's not like the wall suddenly popped up one day with Trump shortly after Trump took office. The single biggest change was people who had previously been thinking about sneaking across the border now felt unwelcome, now felt like, oh, wait a minute, the government is going to try to catch me and throw me back. And there was sort of a deterrent effect that it kind of had discouraged people from wanting to try this. They decided it just wasn't the risk. My suspicion is that when you start saying, you know, when the headline gets out, Trump deploying National Guard to border, that probably will discourage more people who will say, whoa, 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 okay, the heat is on over there. My chances of making it through are not good, and I'm not going to bother trying to do that. Really kind of fascinating example just in today's paper. I believe it was the Wall Street Journal. The caravan that had kind of attracted some of the attention of Central American migrants. It is still in southern Mexico, still hundreds of miles from the U.S. border. It actually hasn't moved in the last couple of days. They are apparently operating in some sort of public sports center. And have basically said, now that they realize that there's this much media attention and discussion of them, that they don't know if it is safe for them to try to go further and try to cross the U.S. border. So their fate remains unknown, but kind of interesting. The fact that Trump is furious about this in and of itself is enough to stop them. So I think this is a step towards a more secure border. I don't think it would be a good idea to make this use of National Guard troops permanent. I think we'd prefer a more long-term solution, and I think that building the wall – look, what Trump probably ought to do, or what the Trump administration and congressional Republicans probably ought to do is like, okay, let's start building the walls in places where it makes the most sense. And let's observe that perhaps there are some places where it wouldn't make sense to build a wall, that we already have sufficient border security in a non-wall format, or these parts of the U.S.-Mexican border would be so remote that nobody's going to try to sneak over there because they'd be risking starvation and death. And dying of thirst and things like that. The other possibility, but one of the possibility I've heard is the idea that you could attempt to build the wall on U.S. military-controlled land. I don't know how much of that land is up against the U.S.-Mexican border. I'd be kind of surprised and unnerved if there really were large numbers of people sneaking across the border on U.S. military-based territory. Greg, I'd like to think that would be safe, but maybe it isn't. But these are all kind of baby steps, but all in all, the freak out on the folks of Trump critics really isn't warranted, at least in this case. My suspicion is it'll have a deterrent effect on at least some migrants trying to sneak across the border.
All right, let's move on to the bad martini now, Jim. And I take you in the Wayback Machine to 2001. At that point, Virginia had elected Republican governors two straight times, George Allen and Jim Gilmore. Democrat Mark Warner was trying to win the governorship, which he ultimately did. And one of the reasons he did so well against Republicans in 2001 is because he went to the red areas of Virginia, went to the Southwest, he went to NASCAR events, talked about how much he liked guns. Imagine how much has changed now that Mark Warner's in the U.S. Senate. Virginia is much bluer than it was over 15 years ago, and now the gun control issue is front and center. This is the Washington Free Beacon. Senator Mark Warner has reversed course from his long-stated views on gun control, signaling that he now supports a federal ban on assault-style weapons and limits on high-capacity magazines. Quote, "I don't know how I can responsibly look at those young people and not say, we need to do something," Warner said on Friday, according to the Virginian Pilot. Quote, "We can debate around the edges where and what the perfect solution is, but it's time for action," unquote. Warner admitted that a blanket ban would be difficult to implement, as it would require the federal government to find consensus on the definition of what constitutes an assault weapon. So, Jim, Mark Warner is just like, kind of like Tim Kaine. They're these guys that always pose as the reasonable, moderate types, and then you look at the numbers and they vote with the Democratic president, if there is one, or the Democratic leadership well over 90% of the time. So I'm sure you're completely shocked that Mark Warner is towing the liberal line now that this is a front and center issue.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how much the term – my suspicion is that when you hear the term moderate applied to a Republican lawmaker, it probably is the Susan Collins variety. Where I believe she's voting against the president or Trump's agenda. I got to look it up, the number, but it's something like 20-30%, a fairly significant amount. And, some very high profile ones, the effort to repeal and replace Obamacare, kind of wavering on the tax cuts, eventually came on board with that. You know, but it's based in policy. My suspicion, Greg, is that when you hear the word moderate applied to a Democratic lawmaker, much more often what they mean is demeanor, the rhetoric, what they say, than the actual positions and votes that they take. Because I'm sitting here and trying to think, Greg, can we think of any time where there's been an issue of, Tom Daschle thinks he might be able to pass this legislation, but there are questions if Mark Warner will abandon them and put the kibosh on the Democratic priority. I don't recall off the top of my head. I don't come across with much of that.
No.
His voting record has been, pretty. You don't hear that much grumbling about him. I remember there was a bit of talk about him running for president in 2008. He had kind of positioned himself, and I think it's pretty clear that, there's a guy named Barack Obama jumped in and people kind of were gravitating and much more excited about him. But I mean, Warner is one of those guys who has this, you want to talk about what, there's no two ways about it. He is quote unquote popular here in Virginia, always reelected rather safely. Job approval rating is fairly high. And you ask people, well, what's he done that you really like? And you tend to get crickets, that they tend to like him. They tend to have a, general vague positive. And I think, maybe we could say, OK, let's give him a little bit of credit for being moderate in his rhetoric. But you certainly don't see him going out of his way to rebuke anybody on his side of the aisle for excessive rhetoric. I've never heard him take it to Alan Grayson. So, it is a fairly easy label to earn if you're a Democrat. Just don't froth at the mouth too much, and you can, regularly sell yourself. And what's more, in terms of the policies you support and the votes that you make, you can drift further and further and further left. And at no point will anyone really kind of say, hey, okay, correction. At this point, very few people in mainstream media and other folks or political watchers will say something like, liberal Senator Mark Warner, even though I think his, voting record could hold up to that pretty easily.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And sadly, Virginia's turning blue, so I don't know that this will necessarily hurt him all that much, as it absolutely would have when he first ran for governor in 2001, or even when he ran for Senate in 2008, although Jim Gilmore didn't exactly put up fierce resistance in that campaign. Ed Gillespie in that 2014 race, that could have made a difference, supposedly. But we'll see. Yeah, Mark Warner and Tim Kaine, they talk a good game, but the votes are what they are. All right, Jim, let's move on to our crazy martini now. And there's a lot of things we could talk about, but I think this one's the most urgent. Oh, love that music. The UK Sun. Steven Spielberg thinks action legend Indiana Jones is finally ready for the ultimate adventure to be played by a woman. The director knows he would risk fan fury by casting an actress in the role made famous by Harrison Ford, now 75, but he believes it's time the explorer took a different form. In an exclusive interview, Spielberg nodded when asked if this new look Jones could be female and added, "We'd have to change the name from Jones to Joan, and there would be nothing wrong with that." Filming for the fifth movie in the Indiana Jones franchise is due to begin in April next year. That is when the director will decide on whether to go ahead with Joan and once again lead the way in putting words about Hollywood equality into action. So, Jim, I like to pretend there wasn't a fourth Indiana Jones film. I think at the end of The Last Crusade, he and Sean Connery riding off into the sunset really is where it ought to end, because Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was such a complete disaster. My general thought on this is they should just kill the franchise entirely and just let it go. But if you want a strong adventure with a female lead, Wonder Woman did well. I think Lara Croft did pretty well. Just create one instead of remaking the old one.
Greg, first of all, I really believe we should have discussed this first. This is the most important issue of the day as far as I'm concerned. We go through this every couple of years. Everybody makes their jokes about, Harrison Ford is getting so old, Indiana Jones, the retirement home of doom, et cetera, et cetera. A couple of years ago, there was a rumor that Chris Pratt from Guardians of the Galaxy and the Jurassic World movies being recast. Look, I think there are certain roles that characters own and that you should not attempt to recast them. This is not James Bond. We've not gotten used to the idea of a different actor playing this someone over and over again. But there are other possibilities. And I mentioned that, it's very weird. It's very weird to say, look, Steven Spielberg, let me tell you a little bit about filmmaking, okay? Okay, amateur, all right? But one of the observations is that most of the times you've seen series get quote-unquote rebooted is acknowledge the passage of time and you take a character and you create a new character. You tell the same kind of story, the same kind of elements, tone, adventure. You know, you can use some of the familiar themes and music and the kinds of things that happen in Indiana Jones movie, but don't do it with Indiana Jones. I'm thinking of Creed, the quote-unquote reboot of the Rocky franchise, starring it was Michael B. Jordan as Apollo Creed's son. And
right.
you bring in Stallone for one cameo, kind of the old mentor character. But, you know, the same thing we've kind of done with Star Wars. You take a character who could be Indiana Jones's granddaughter, perhaps. Like, no, I don't think anyone would object about that kind of a story. He was a professor for lots of years. How about you have a journalism professor? How about some sort of modern day journalist finds Indiana Jones's diary? And here's a reference to some treasure Indiana Jones was never able to find. And he decides to go off on this quest to find that or something like that. You can tell a story clearly set in the Indiana Jones universe. And let's remember the first movie, despite George Lucas's endless impulse to retweak things, was called Raiders of the Lost Ark. It was not called Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, as they later attempted to claim and try to rename it. So you call this one, you know, Raiders or something. You call it some sort, you know, not Tomb Raider. You come up with some variation of that. You clearly tell this is the world of Indiana Jones, but Indy's off in retirement. Harrison Ford does not have to, you know, come out and look geriatric anymore or anything like that. But we're going to tell modern, pulpy, fun action adventure movies set in a later era. And in that same style, same tone, humor, all that kind of stuff, but you don't have to do that. And most importantly, Greg, is you really would never have to use Shia LaBeouf ever again. Ever.
Yes, yes. There are so many things wrong with the fourth movie that I won't even name again. But we talked about Shia LaBeouf in a different context a few years back on the Three Martini Lunch. It was around the time Edward Snowden and the NSA leak came out. And Jim did a Morning Jolt post talking about the movie Enemy of the State from about 20 years ago now with Gene Hackman and Will Smith. And this never actually made it into the podcast, but I said this to him after we stopped taping that day. And his response was classic about Shia LaBeouf.
Exactly. Now, you also did a very smart thing by associating yourself with that movie rather than Eagle Eye with Shia LaBeouf. So,
Here's the thing. If there was a giant government conspiracy to kill Shia LaBeouf, wouldn't we all be applauding the government? You ruined Indiana Jones! You ruined Transformers! You ruined Wall Street! Three franchises are enough!
Yeah, Jim, I'd rather watch an 80-year-old Harrison Ford just growl about something than Shia LaBeouf do anything.
Could you imagine? Anyway, Harrison Ford it seems like just criminally unenthusiastic about any of his interviews now. Could you imagine if they forced him to make Indiana Jones 5?
Well, it's a great honor and excitement to get together with Steven and George again. We've had so many great times over the decades and decades. Going back to 1980, that I'm just beside myself.
That seems to be the tone of Harrison Ford and all these things. I realized now also that movie Eagle Eye, you know why that idea of this vast government conspiracy and all these spy cameras focusing in on Shia LaBeouf, you know why that movie never really passed the plausibility test, Greg?
Why?
It meant somebody was wanting to watch Shia LaBeouf.
Here's my last question about this. If we do, in fact, find out that he has a long-lost daughter or a granddaughter, can they still fight Nazis? Because that's really the key to making an Indiana Jones movie good. Because the first one and the third one were great. The second one was okay, but not as good. And the fourth one was trash.
So you want to set it in Charlottesville?
Hey, if that's what it's got to be, that's what it's got to be.
As much as people didn't like the fourth one, I thought doing the Soviets were perfectly good. Go figure, though, as many of us on the right have been arguing, Greg, the differences between the Nazis and the Soviets, a little bit of stylistic uniform differences. That's about it. You know, perhaps the hammer and sickle branding was every bit as menacing and scary as the Nazis were. Look, the modern world does not lack enough regimes that are menacing and scary and brutal, and you know, you can have them wear the black hats or something like that. Guess it wouldn't be China, huh, Greg?
Probably not.
I think those films work there. But, you know, I mean, you could, you know, Indiana Jones's granddaughter versus the Iranians or the North Koreans.
Not bad.
There's no, you know, Venezuelan, Cuban. I mean, you could put this in a lot of corners of today's world with, you know, menacing thugs chasing him or her in any conceivable, you know, boats, planes, motorcycles, jets, you know, all that kind of stuff. It could be no shortage of fun and excitement if they Like, I've got the screenplay ready, Hollywood. Call me.
I actually like the Cold War theme in the fourth one until it just got insane with the different stunts that nobody would have survived, and then the part with the aliens at the end. And yes, I spoiled it for you. You can thank me. Don't ever watch the last Indiana Jones movie. It's horrible. You'll waste 2 or 3 hours of your life. I just spoiled it for you. You're welcome.
Greg, is anyone going to say, hey, you spoiled the fourth Indiana Jones movie? I know traditionally you need those kinds of warnings and all that. Come on. No one's going to complain. No. Yeah, you're on safe ground there.
Thank you, sir. It's also been a decade. So we'll stop there for today. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. Follow us on Twitter. He's at Jim Garrity. I'm at Dateline_DC. And tune in again Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.